Minnesota basketball fans, welcome back to the Living in Loserville podcast. Minnesota Gophers edition. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. My co-host, Aaron Miller, will be joining us shortly. And we're here to discuss, no, not the Vikes. We've been on the Vikes for quite some time. We did talk about this show quite some time ago. And we're breaking down some of the 90s. Gophers basketball, some of the heyday, but really we're going to focus and we're going to set you up all the way to that 96-97 run to the Final Four, the season that never happened, of course, as we know it now. Courtney James and Bobby Jackson on that squad. I'm not going to say anything more, actually. I don't want to get in trouble here. But no, we are definitely, you know, we've been doing these Vikes 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s and all that. We've been going through all this old school stuff, so we figure why not give it a little Gopher stuff. We are planning on doing a late 80s run too, that first Clem run, which is, you know, there's one particular year that stands out, but man, that little run right there that the Gophers have was pretty damn solid too. So we're going to kind of ease our way from the 90s all the way to 96-97 and then get more in depth when it comes to that. If this is your first time listening to the Living in Loserville podcast, it streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. It streams live at archives right here, but you don't have to go to Blog Talk through the browser or download it if you don't want to. You can find it really across the board. You can find this podcast under the Ropeadope Radio podcast at Apple Podcast, Player FM, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found across the board, including Spotify. You can use your Siri or Alexa through Spotify or TuneIn to find the platforms. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. That's thegruelingtruth.com. It's football, it's basketball, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's everything in between. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu, with the promo code TGT. And one more thing before we get into the season that the NCAA says never happened. I got something for you. I'm actually a customer myself. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable, okay? They have the seven-day free trial. Once you sign up, the plans start as low as $55 a month. There's no annual contract. Can stream it anywhere. We have the cloud DVR as well. It's called AT&T TV Now. Like I said, live streaming cable. However, if you're by an airport or just in an area in your state where you just have really poor internet, they do have AT&T TV, which is a normal cable platform. It's a growing platform. It's not available everywhere. It is here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, parts of New York, parts of Florida, parts of Texas, parts of California, all the way up to the Northwest in Seattle, other places like St. Louis in the Midwest. Basically, just Google it, put your area code in there, see if you got it. Otherwise, AT&T TV Now, like I said, live streaming cable. Okay, so once again, we've reiterated this a couple times, but it's worth it. We just want to say we appreciate all the listenership through this time when there's been no live sports. The NHL, the NBA, boxing, UFC, stuff's coming back. Golf is coming back. There's a lot of stuff coming back. But through this time, also, of course, you know, our appreciation just in general for listening to the show. But during this time, too, all these rewind shows we've been doing, we really appreciate it. And also for all the essential workers out there, whether it's a hospital or a grocery store, wherever you've been, you know, our thoughts are out there for you. Now we're starting to open up a little bit. I actually returned to work at a part-time basis. So there is, you know, some good news here. Obviously, Minneapolis, we've had a lot of stuff go on in the city. Hopefully we can make some change. We've already made a minor bit of change, but hopefully it can keep going. So, you know, like I said, we just appreciate everything. But we're going to focus in on this Minnesota Gopher squad. It's called the Living in Loserville podcast throughout the year. You know, we do Vikings with a little bit of Gophers football on the back end of the Vikings. Then we switch once once February's done, you know, in the Vikings, you know, win the Super Bowl, knock on wood, then we switch. Usually it's mid-January. Who are we fooling? Then we switch to Timberwolves and Gophers ball. And that's what we were doing before this pandemic hit. So we figure we'll just stick with the old school theme. I'm gonna go ahead and bring in my co-host Aaron, see how he's doing. What's going on, man? How the heck are you, dude?
I'm good, man. June's here, so that's good. So we're kind of leading up to summer, I guess. Spring sort of, but now we're in summer, and that's good. And you know, a lot going on this week, like you said. Glad that everybody decides to take a listen. A lot going on here this week, but it's sort of mellowing out now. We hope that continues, and we just continue to hope and make some progress with the city and all the stuff that's going on in the city and around the nation. So I just want to thank everybody out there that's, you know, trying to make a difference. Let's hope that it actually is effective. And yeah, we've been doing the Rewind shows. Those have been good, especially like the Vikings thing. We'll throw that out. Happy birthday to Zim today. I don't know how old he is, but another birthday going by. He's 64. So yeah, you know, he's probably still on the ranch, but yeah, a season that never happened, man. Let's get after it.
Season that never happened. And while we kind of make our way to that 96 and 97 season, we actually do have a personal story during that season that we'll get to as well. We actually moved to California together back in the day during this season. So we'll catch you all up to that. But starting kind of like we did with the Vikings, we'll just kind of make our way, you know, more rapidly because it's such an in-depth, more of an in-depth 96, 97, of course. And we didn't do a whole lot up until that point. I mean, NIT, don't get me wrong. I mean, we got to have some of the most NIT championships possible. Of course, the NIT used to be the big tournament back in the day, so I guess that doesn't actually line up now that I think about it. See, living in Louisville still had to just somehow find a way to shit on us. But anyway, we're looking at 1990-91 Gophers, Golden Gophers roster. And it was a bad year, very bad year, 5-13 and ninth in the Big Ten, and that was when it was 10 teams too, 12-16 overall. But you know, you had a couple of juniors and seniors like Kevin Lynch, Walter Bond, Bob Martin, Rob Medcalf, even Randy Carter as well. It's always just like those Vikings shows that we did. It's always fun to kind of go through some of these old names, kind of moving up to the next year. 500 ball, 8-10 in the Big Ten, so they were sixth that year. And Ariel McDonald joined the club. Randy Carter, I remember him. Townsend Orr is another name that kind of stands out, but probably the biggest name coming in there as a freshman that year was Vashawn Leonard. And Vashawn Leonard definitely was a great shooter, great scorer in general, real smooth player, long, lanky, had that three-point shot, and he did a lot of damage just in general. When he was with the Gophers, you flip it up a couple more, like to 92-93, 500 club. Randy Carter's a junior, Ariel McDonald. I forgot Chad Colander. Some of these names. And actually, Creighton. Jose Creighton. He was from Rosemont. And he actually went to the rival school that Aaron and I went to, Egan. And he actually played running back for them in a running style offense, but he also obviously played point guard for Rosemont the Irish too. But this is his freshman year. He never really did, you know, a whole lot per se, but just seeing that name brings me back to the to that high school football game. He was a pretty damn good running back, if I remember correctly. In that year, oh yeah, they cut down the nets. Five straight wins with the NIT. They beat Providence in Georgetown in Madison Square Garden. And those are, you know, Big East teams, Atlantic 10 teams at that time. So, I mean, that's something. God, if you look at these names, Florida, Oklahoma, Georgetown, it sounds great. If it was like sometime in the 70s and the NIT was the real tournament, then it'd sound really great. But, of course, that was not the case. Look at like 93, 94, 22-13. 10-8 in the fourth, we were fourth in the Big Ten. And that was a year that they actually got to the second round, lost to Louisville in a competitive game. I remember that Southern Illinois squad was pretty good, but just kind of getting near the year that we're really going to dig into. Some of these names, like I said, Ariel McDonald, and once you get in there, Jason Walton, I forgot about him. But you started to see some Trevor Winter, John Thompson was a freshman. Both those guys were freshmen. So you started to see, even though Leonard wasn't a part of the big run, as a junior that year I'm talking about, David Grimm is another one. Some of these names, man, you know, this was kind of a fluctuating time. They made that nice run in the late 80s, and then it was kind of like, oh, NIT, that's great. Oh, get in the tournament, then lose. You know, they just weren't able to be consistent for that first 5 years or so. But they still were entertaining to watch. They were still, like, right there on the cusp of a tourney team. But they just couldn't quite put it all together until that 1 year.
That was the when I had moved here, these were the first Gopher squads I remember following. We were in high school at the time. And we, you know, that we were up against the Fab Five over at Michigan. I remember we had a player that would have been maybe part of the Fab Five, Vashawn Leonard. I think he got beat out. There was some story about how he got recruited at Michigan and they took someone else or something. I don't remember exactly how that story went. But he was the first kind of Gopher superstar, and he could shoot. He was good. We watched a lot of games in your basement, watching Vashawn Leonard and those guys on that squad. So that was fun to see again. Those names like you brought up were Hosea Crittenden. Yeah, you're at Rosemont running back guy. And he kind of, the Gophers, he sort of became like a Rudy type of guy where he'd get in at the end of games, finish games off. He was kind of a spirit, kind of, you know, how do you say, guys like that that kind of get in and clean up games and blowouts. And, you know, he played some minutes with injuries and played pretty well, but yeah, I never really saw the floor in any significant time on that squad. But, yeah, those squads were kind of the first ones I remember. They were fun to watch. Ariel McDonald set a point guard. That was pretty good. But, yeah, we're right coming on the cusp. Like you said, Thomas was a freshman coming in. We had no idea what the team would build to be. But at this point, they're just kind of a middle Big Ten team. Like you said, got a little NIT success and went from there.
I mean, a whole lot of NIT. Okay, I'll stop. But, yeah, I remember that short, stocky. That dude was a short, stocky running back, man. and I obviously we remember, you know, beating him, and it was such a big deal because Egan had just opened up, yada, yada, yada. But it is pretty funny. But you go to that next year, 94-95, the Gophers did make it, lost to St. Louis. And I believe St. Louis, this one, they had a pretty good squad. I think they got to the Sweet 16 that year, if I remember correctly. But they got beat in the first round. But once again, by that time, Vashawn was a senior. God, he was just steady in his numbers, too. He had a guy, Jason Walton, Thomas Orr. I mentioned Colander, a bunch of seniors on that club, but you also had some dudes coming in. Sam Jacobson, back in the day, could really leap out the gym. Park at Cottage Grove, I believe he went to. John Thompson was a sophomore. He started getting more playing time. And Eric Harris was a freshman guard. Didn't get a ton of time because of, you know, Orr mostly, but That's where you're like, okay, this is where it started coming together. Another 20-10, 10-8 in the fifth in the Big Ten. This is exactly what a lot of Clem's teams and Gopher teams in general, not to just put it on Clem, kind of do. They kind of just, like you said, middle of the pack, not a huge deal. But I remember that year that they went to the NIT, but we thought they were going to make the big tournament because they needed to – they thought, okay, this is before the conference final kicked in too, and so for the Big Ten. And at Illinois, Sam Jacobson hit a shot on the road, 67-66. They won their last three, and we thought, yep, they're going to get in. They're going to get into the tournament, and they're a little hot this last chunk, maybe 10 games. I think they were 7-3. It was like, yeah, they're going to get in. And then, nope, they didn't get in, unfortunately. Funny thing enough, though, they took on St. Louis, the team that they had gotten beat in the big tournament, and beat them and then went down to Tulane, which is kind of funky. That's kind of funny. And so that was NIT action. But like I said, when you see that roster, I felt pretty damn good that year. You brought in who it says junior, Bobby Jackson, because he was from JUCO. You brought in a freshman, Courtney James. Brought in a freshman, Quincy Lewis. Charles Thompson was another guy. I mean, when you start to look at that roster there, those are some names that they needed to glue together, Aaron, but I kind of felt like they were a better team than making it to the NIT. And obviously the next year turned in, but when you look at that 95-96 roster, it was jam-packed with talent all of a sudden.
It was, but we weren't really aware of it yet. Sam Jacobson, Bobby Jackson, John Thomas, Quincy Lewis had come in, like you said, Courtney James, Eric Harris had showed up as a point guard. You had Miles Tarver, who would go on and be a significant part of the team later. And Trevor Winter came in, was in there as well. So you had a lot of guys on that squad that ended up playing in the NBA eventually. And, yeah, you're right. I think you hit the nail on the head with a sort of a glue season, making everything come together. And it all kind of ended in a way with the selection show. And, you know, the Cameron Minnesota didn't make the tournament. Heads fell down. And I think it really lit the fire for the year after.
Yeah, that's exactly what it did, dude. Because I remember I was over at a guy that we went to high school with, Ryan Fritz, and we were at his house. I remember watching that and hitting the buzzers, like Sam hit it. Oh, shit, yeah, we're going to the tournament. And then, like you said, I do think that maybe that it lit the fire even more. But it also, you could kind of see they put up kind of a lackluster NIT showing, knowing like, hey, dude, we're not an NIT squad, and it may have messed with them, but man, like you mentioned, they really popped off that next year. Bobby Jackson, 15 points. Sam Jacobson, almost 14 points. Eric Harris really started coming along, almost 4 assists and 11 points. John Thompson was not a walking double-double because it is college, but he was damn good. You put John Thompson and Courtney James down low. That was a lot of funk down low, and then you had instant offense, Quincy Lewis off the bench. Like you mentioned, Miles Tarver did come off the bench. Rush Archambault came off the bench as well. I almost forgot about that guy, too. He actually had a bigger role down the line, but, coming off the bench as well, Trevor Martin. Man, when you look at that lineup, dude, you have 5 guys that played in the pros, and that's a deep squad, dude. It's big. It's athletic. Like I said, people off the bench, that goes like 9 deep. And a 9 deep in college, that means something.
It really does. When you go to the bench, I mean, recent Gopher squads have had problems with filling out the bench, particularly last year. And that has to do with a few issues. But it's rare to go 9 deep. I mean, you really can rest players, keep them fresh. And they really did that a lot. They had quality, two deep at the point guard, 2 deep at it's shooting guard, you know, or, you know, Quincy was sort of a 2-3. He could play them both. Courtney James, Charles Thomas, who was actually a 2-guard backup in that squad. And you're right. You had a lot of depth and a lot of good players, and you couldn't help but be a successful team.
And, Clem was always going to have you playing hard defense. You know, one thing is they could defend, that's for sure. They were a rough and tumble type squad, but they started to score at a high rate. And I'm looking at the points per game, 78 points, especially back then, less, 3-point shots, 32nd out of 306 teams. So that tells you something. It's not like we were playing in this chump conference either. You know, the Big Ten was always pretty solid. It still remains pretty solid. But when you look at that next year, man, that year, I should say. They won like, what is it, 5 or 6 early, lost to Alabama in a non-conference game. And then they strung 10 in a row and through the non-conference and obviously into the Big Ten. I do remember that Indiana game, that overtime game, 96-91, that Michigan State game. I mean, Clemson, the funny thing is they beat Clemson 75-65, had to obviously play them again later, but they went 10 in a row and lost to Illinois 96-90. I think that was on the road. And then they went ahead and we'll just rack up 12 more victories. And this is where we weren't used to this kind of winning. You know, even when the late 80s, they made a run to the Elite Eight, they weren't really lined up to do that. They were kind of not coming out of nowhere, but it didn't feel like they were that good of enough club to beat a Syracuse and Derek Coleman and whatnot. But in this one, and the personal part of it is, so the season started, they started going up in the rankings, and thank goodness, you know, there wasn't Twitter, Sports Centers where you got your highlights. There wasn't YouTube, so you could just watch the games later or something like that. There wasn't much of that. And we were really thankful that the season was going so good, right? And Aaron and I actually moved out to California at that time. And we specifically remember sometimes because they were ranked, they'd be on national TV or on ESPN, like during the week. But no matter what, since they're ranked so high, they would give you, you know how it goes, the bigger ranked games and all that, they're going to break down the game on ESPN. And obviously back then they broke it down way more because they weren't worried about a highlight coming on someone's phone. So they could control all of that. And that's obviously why they got so huge. But I remember, like, you know, following it, you know, maybe a game that wasn't on broadcast and just waiting on SportsCenter to see what it was, and we saw the bottom line and we see that we won, but how do we win and the box scores and all that. It wasn't like you could just go online and check ESPN.com. It was all just newspaper the next day if you want the stats for whatever, you know, they showed us on SportsCenter. But I remember a few times sitting there waiting till about 10 o'clock waiting for that freaking, well, I guess it'd be 8 o'clock there, but waiting for that SportsCenter to come on so we could see, like, our, I think they got all the way up to second rank that year. And that was clutch, dude, because they weren't televised every single solitary game back then because we weren't in Minnesota.
No, they weren't televised a lot, but, you know, you're right. They had gone up the rankings as the season progressed and were on national TV enough where we could actually see them. They did have some packages back in the day. I think there was, like, some version of Minnesota Sport Channel or something like that. I forgot what it was, but where you could catch games if you were able to. What was that? Goddamn, it's going to eat
MSC
me up.
MSC was the public. MSC, I yeah, think. MSC something was like the that. Free one. It was part of your cable.
Yeah. And so you could check that out. And I kind of kept an eye on them as they were kind of, you know, winning games early. And you thought, okay, you know, we're Minnesotans, so we're like, okay, we'll see if it continues. And it did. They went on that 12-win streak. And we were just like, okay, well, this is something we haven't seen before. But you knew you kind of had Sam and you had Bobby. And those guys kind of were the linchpin. If they could score and Eric could get the ball to them. And then, like you said, you had the guys down low. That was just, you know, it was tough to stop, you know, two really strong post players with that kind of backcourt. So it all kind of came together and, you know, you could see on TV enough, and you're right, man, how things have changed. There's no, you know, we didn't have smartphones. We didn't have, you know, internet. We didn't have, internet was young at the time. You couldn't really watch a game on there.
Yeah, nobody
or get
had
highlights.
Websites. Like, no
websites.
And shit, you know?
Yeah, like, people still had their
websites. At that time, you're like, what are we using? What would that be used for? You know?
Yeah, and still had the landline phones that were majority of people were using. So, yeah, it was hard to get the highlights. When you think back on it now, you're like, wow, you're right. You had to stay up late or catch the paper the next day and get the sports writer's view of the game. And it was a lot of that. And then as we moved, you said, I think you were mentioning that we stopped in Utah on the way to California and watched a game in a McDonald's. Did we watch a game in that McDonald's when we stopped?
No. That was we did, but it was the NBA All-Star game.
Oh, it was the NBA All-Star game, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and then we got to California. You saw a few, I think we saw one or two games down there, but they were just building up to the tournament at the time, and they were already top of the Big Ten and had been there for a while. And we're entering the tournament with a lot of steam, and we just wanted to see where it would go. I mean, they had great tournament runs, especially I wasn't there for the Willie Burton run. So I just gotten at the end of that. So we weren't right. Too far removed, about 10 years removed, maybe 8 years removed from a serious run, but from going from a team that got left out of the tournament to being a team that would make some damage in the tournament was obviously something we didn't expect at the beginning of that season. And we're refreshed to see it at the end and excited to see that. I mean, that almost never happens. And, you know, it didn't happen.
Yeah, it didn't. 27-3. They ended up losing, of course, on the road by a point to Wisconsin. And probably Wisconsin snuck in the tournament that way or some shit like that. First round, Texas State, no big deal. Temple, good program still at that time. Maybe not peaking, but still a good program. Handled them. And then Clemson came along. And this was just an intense, I mean, the intensity of this game. And I remember playing them earlier, like I mentioned earlier, and it was just like, this could be a tough club, because I could tell they're good, and they had definitely gotten better. We were number one seed, second overall seed, I believe, going into it, maybe third overall, I can't remember that. Number one seed in the conference going against Clemson. 90-84 in double overtime. And like I said, it was just an exciting game. Bobby Jackson went off for freaking 36 points, dude. 36 points, had almost 9 rebounds. The dude was just filling it up. Jacobson went for 29 as well. Both those guys shot a pretty high percentage. You had more of a – that was really those two that were doing the damage. For the most part, there was some fall problems early, but just a back and forth game. And I'm trying to think, what the hell? I remember Greg Buckner. I remember him. He went off. Yeah, he went off for 22 points. It seemed like their bench did more damage, and yeah, 10 and 12 points off the bench. But that, it just seemed like, man, this can't be where we lose. We're too good. We can't be losing the Sweet 16. But that Clemson game was insane, and just every possession counted so much, man.
It did. And, you know, like you said, Bobby Jackson stepped up in that game in particular, kind of led the team on that. I mean, that without him and those moments, I don't think they would have got over that hump. But, I mean, Quincy Lewis came in and played well, and he's always a good guy off the bench. And I don't remember exactly all the ebb and flow of that game, but I remember it being very close, and that they pulled it out in the end. It wasn't the last second shot. It was this kind of, they won it.
Yeah,
but
no,
it was
the last second shot.
No, it was a struggle all the way through.
Yeah.
And that was a nail biter. I mean, because I think we'd only advanced as far as the Sweet 16. I don't think we got to the 8 with Burton before that.
But we did get to that 1 year,
though.
We did.
We did get the 8?
Yeah, they got all right. Beat up by Duke.
Oh, yeah. What was he? What do we lose to Georgia Tech?
Well, we'll get into that when we do that show.
Okay.
Let's not worry about it. Well, I think it was the year before that, or the year after.
Yeah. That one sticks out to me, so that's kind of what's in my mind right now. But, yeah, I mean, that was a surprise for all of us. But in a way, it really wasn't, because you knew you had the players, and if you played well, there wasn't anybody you could beat. And then eventually they got over that hump and got onto the Elite Eight.
And then a very talented squad in UCLA, who had won a championship just a year or two before this. They didn't have one of the old Bannon brothers, but they still had Charles. UCLA is who I'm speaking of. Toby Bailey, Cameron Dollar, J.R. Henderson, McCoy as well, who actually played in the league. Charles, like I mentioned, Charles O'Bannon. That squad was damn good. And that was because Toby Bailey as a freshman was the bomb. And it was like, whoa, he just mixes so good with this. And they ended up winning. But that game, we actually, a couple of months ago, feels like almost a year ago now, Aaron. But we actually sat there and kind of chitter-chattered back and forth and watched a good chunk of that game. And, you know, Thomas and James just rebounding the shit out of, you know, just a beast down low. Cameron Dollar, though, dude, I wasn't feeling overly confident because of the layers of depth they had on that squad.
No, you're right. And Cameron Dollar was a better point guard than Eric Harris, had a little different job. He was a scorer, where Eric Harris was more of a defense and facilitating kind of keep everything together sort of point guard. But Toby Bailey didn't have the greatest game. I think if he would have, it could have changed the game. He didn't play well, but you're right. It was the front court of us, Courtney James and John Thomas and the guys off the bench that really rebounded, played defense, made it tough for them to get in the lane, which is what they sort of like to do at UCLA, was you know, get in the lane. They were kind of a flashier team. But the grit of the Gophers kind of won that one for them, rebounding, defense. All the things that were kind of Clem's signature led to that victory.
And, dude, they were 1 of 12 from three-point land. But if you look at the two-point percentage, you know, 62, 66, 70, 50, 62. Like, they were like, all right, we'll just make twos. And it was a wide, you know, where Jacobson and Bobby, you know, some of his layups and just him going to the rack with those, you know, those knee-high socks. I remember I'll see him a couple times in the last maybe 6 years. I saw him maybe three times at boxing events. And I'll just sneak by and be like, hey, you got the socks on down there? Because he'll have, like, jeans on. And he always laughs and shit like that. But, dude, the things he could do in the air with the layup and taking the contact, it was crazy. And just the all-purpose guy, he actually carried that in. Not Mr. Triple-Double, but damn close. I mean, this guy would put up a lot of different stats for Sacramento and some other teams, too. But it was more of a spread on this one. 18 points from Bobby. You know, Jacobson, him and Jacobson didn't have to do the whole load. 14 on Jacobson. James had 12. John Thompson had 7 and 7. Charles Thompson played. That was one of his best games. One of his best games in the tournament, I'd say. Probably maybe one of the best games of the year. 14 points, and then Quincy instant offense off the bench, 15 as well. So you had five dudes in double figures. But you're right. Between Cameron Dollar and Toby Bailey, I remember Jacobson was in a little fall problems late in that game, and Quincy really came up and stepped up. That was another tight game. But Toby Bailey and Cameron Dollar, the speed in which they got up that court, man, it was something to see, and we kind of forgot how damn good they are. We're watching this old footage like, dude, these dudes, this was a tough matchup. And like I said, they didn't have Ed, but they had Charles, and J.R. Henderson played in the league. So, I mean, that was a pretty damn good win. And obviously that got us to the Final Four. And then Eric Harris. There was Sam Cassell. In the year of 2004, right, when they maybe could have beat Detroit that year if they had Sam Cassell. Well, Eric Harris wasn't able to play against Kentucky. And going into that game, knowing that you don't have, you know, a healthy Eric Harris, was he this phenomenal player? No. But we had a lot of talent, both sides offensively and defensively. We had a lot of talent, but you know, once he went down, he tried to play. He was a little banged up. He tried to play. He just, when he was out there, you could see it just wasn't him. It was just like, nah, dude, it's not happening. You know, he had a bunch of turnovers. Bobby Jackson was trying to do a little too much. They were really focusing in on him. He had 6 turnovers. Courtney James had 4 turnovers. John Thompson had 4 turnovers. Lewis, even him off the bench, Charles Thompson had turnovers. So that, and a lot of fouls too. That kind of showed you, without Harris, it was, I'm not going to say, oh, we win the national championship, but it really hurt us, dude. And that's one of those things where you look back and knock on wood and all this living in Loserville stuff. But without Harris, it just, I don't know, man. It just, you could tell we just weren't that cohesive unit on offense that we had been. We spread the ball. You know, one guy could go off or 5 dudes would go off. So that really hurt not having Eric Harris, man, at least a healthy one.
Yeah, when you have a guy all season, especially a point guard who's doing what point guards do, and then you, in a pivotal moment, like a game in the Final Four, you lose him and throw the whole team off balance. I mean, I thought a lot of that had to do with probably some nerves in there, first Final Four. And then you lose a piece. You know, he wasn't the greatest scorer, but he definitely was the glue guy. He definitely facilitated the ball. And you can't really replace that, especially when you've played, what, 30-some games or 28 games or something like that, 29. Games with a guy, and then he's gone, and everybody tries to make up for it a little bit, and everybody does a little too much, and who's going to do what and when and how, that becomes a problem. And when you're in a high, I guess a high intensity spot like that game, It's the wrong time to be losing someone, or at least not have a at full full strength.
Yeah.
And you can't put it all on an injury for Eric Harris. I mean, you could have probably done some things if you'd known his real status, but I think they tried to play him. I think he wanted to play, and it didn't work out for you. But you can't really put a, you know, like you said about Sam Cassell, you know, it's the same kind of story. If you got an engine and a part's missing, engine's not going to run well.
Yeah, and whereas with the Timberwolves in that year and Sam Cassell going to his first All-Star game in that pick and roll, Cassell, you know, that makes me feel like we could have. I mean, we went six games with the Lakers without him. You know, that's where I look at that one and go, we could have won the fucking championship that year, maybe. You know, like and feel good about it, or not feel good about it, but say it with a little, you know, confidence. Whereas this one is still a little iffy, and it started to go downhill after that year. Still had Jacobson, still had Quincy, still had Eric Harris. Kevin Clark came in, Miles Tarver played more, Russ played more, Jason Stanford. Him too. They're brothers, right? Jermaine and yep, Jason. They qualified that next year for the NIT and ended up winning it. I remember Jacobson went off. I think they beat Penn State in the NIT. Of course, you know, another NIT victory. And it was one of those where it's during the week and then they go right to the next game after that. They don't even really celebrate too much in that one, 97-98. But Courtney James wasn't on. John Thompson was a senior, so he moved on. And Courtney James got into that problem. And we all remember Dubé saying, yo, this is Shaq. I'll call you back. And Shaq, yeah, that Shaq Diesel, left in that message on this female's answer machine. And that female just happened to be Courtney James' girlfriend. And Courtney, obviously, it bugged him big time, and to the point where he couldn't he hit his girlfriend with a telephone book, which is something that they did back in the day because it thud girls, but it wouldn't leave a mark as much, which is really a degenerate way to look at it. But it's true. He actually saw more of that, unfortunately. But yeah, he freaking flipped out, got thrown out of the, you know, team in general. So that next year, you know, it pretty much fell apart, obviously. And it didn't take that much longer until the whole thing fell apart. And I do remember Miles Tarver and a couple other guys couldn't play a game. We had qualified for the tournament. And that was it, though. It was like we lost the first game because a lot of the team that we had gotten, you know, so I think Tarver was one of the better players on that. Prisbilla was actually on that squad too. Quincy was a senior as well. But not long after, it went downhill overall. And obviously, pretty soon, it led to, you know, fake tests and all that type of shit. And Clem Hanskins was shown the door. We had that tutor where the tutor was on the team for a while. I remember Courtney James and Bobby Jackson from that squad were the ones that were, this isn't alleged, this is true, were the ones that actually used that tutor. Everybody else had done their work as far as off the investigation. And so those two were the ones that hurt that squad. But overall, there was many other, you know, in a period of time. But pretty soon, you know, it caught up to Clem. It caught up. I mean, it's not just Clem. I mean, we know cheating goes on all the time. But the big thing is I believe that he's decided to, like, switch up. He somehow screwed this lady who was keeping it on the low. And I don't know if he wanted to do, like, the Walmart thing where it's like, we'll give you, you know, we'll hit you with enough little mini, oh, you were 15 minutes late, we'll knock you off, oh, we're going to fire you, let's bring in someone new on a lower fee, on a lower rate. And pretty much it just all blew up in Clem's and the Gophers' face. And like we said a couple of times, the season that never happened, according to the NCAA. But I saw it. You saw it, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw it. It's interesting. You had a lot of good facts about how it actually broke down. I didn't know all those facts. I knew that she had basically came out and said that she had done some of their homework or something like that. And I was thinking, wow, I mean, anybody looking in North Carolina or Duke or anybody like that, I mean, I'm sure they got tutors too. But I think, you know, this lady had something to against Clem, and she ended up saying what she said, and all this happened. And, you know, they came down pretty hard, I think, to get rid of all that stuff, considering what we see in programs today. But back then, it was a pretty scandalous thing and embarrassing for our state. But at the same time, you know, to vacate a whole season in a Final Four run for that seems a little heavy-handed. But maybe they were trying to make an example. And apparently, Minnesota is always the sacrificial lamb in those types of situations. Although, you know, we did break the rules, but I'm sure there's other rules broken other places. But yeah, it did fall apart after that. Like you said, Clem lost his job over it. And he had been with the program for quite a long time. Then Dan Munson came in. I think they got beat by Gonzaga the year before. So they figured, you know, if they hire the guy that beat him.
This guy's pretty good here. Jeez, yeah, let's bring him in.
And he had a pretty good squad. You know, the name I really sticks out to me on that one's Dusty Reichardt. And you remember him? He was a, like, I think he's a small forward or something like that.
Yeah.
And he actually played pretty well. Yeah,
he wasn't. Developed. He definitely developed
pretty well. But then you had John Blair, Bickerstaff, and those guys. This is for the 2000 season. And so you started to move into that next group of Gophers under Munson. And, you know, Munson's years were just kind of blah. I mean, you didn't get tournament. You didn't get in the NIT. I think maybe you did one season, but it just didn't pan out to be as successful as Clem was at the end there or anything like that. So, yeah, just the months and years, we just kind of all sort of the same season. I mean, looking at the 99-2000 season, they went 12-16, 4-12 in the Big Ten. It was a lot of that with Dan Munson.
Yeah, there really was. And just his style and his up pace and more threes and all that, it didn't translate to big boy Big Ten. And that's not even, you know, Gonzaga had just developed back then. They're not even the club that they, you know, the program overall that they are now, and they've actually made deeper runs and whatnot and got to the final and whatnot. But yeah, man, it's that's why we call it losing and losing. I could just say that. I mean, that would be fit. But yeah, that's why we call it Loserville, because, you know, no matter how, we got to just start doing twin stuff in two seasons, and then we'll be like, yeah, but then it'll be like, oh, but we haven't since. Oh my God, how long? 91. So, yeah, this is, you know, it ended rough, no doubt. But you know what I think it is? It's kind of like Miami a couple of chunk of years back when a booster came out and said what he did. You know, that never happens. A booster telling? No. Just like, you know, like you said, a lot of people everybody uses tutors because they're on the move. But there are some papers, of course, that people don't produce or get a lot of help with, let's put it that way. But the tutor usually doesn't come out and say it. You know, that's the problem. So there was really no hiding that one. And if I remember correctly, I believe Clem was trying to, like, all right, we'll give you a trip here and then we're gonna have you on your way. We gotta get a new one in here or something. There was something like that once the tutor comes out, You rarely see a tutor come out. If they do, it's like years later, and they remained in sports, and then they're just doing an interview or something. But that's why they got so much trouble, because everybody's cheating, but they don't fucking tell you they're cheating. You got to catch them. And up until that, they hadn't caught him at all. And, you know, maybe it was that run he had where they got to the Sweet 16, then the Elite Eight, and then he had to kind of recycle, and they just couldn't get over the hump. And maybe that was legit. And then now he's like, you know what? Fuck this, dude. I'm in the Big Ten. I got the Fab Five. I'm going against, you know, Respirit from Michigan State. Like, there's so many players. Indiana, like, so many squads. And it's like, Wisconsin started coming up and doing really good. Like, I think he just said he did the Barry Bonds. You know, he saw McGuire and Sosa hitting all these runs. Like, dude, I'm better than those dudes. I already got Hall of Fame numbers. I'm going to cheat. So I think maybe that's what it was. Maybe he was cheating before, but I kind of feel like he wasn't, because he would have been able to sustain that success more. And then all of a sudden, he got this big recruit in state, got a big recruit out of state, Courtney James and Lewis, and it was like, oh, okay, sweet, you know. And yeah, we know how that ends. So, any last words about this season and whatnot? We will do one more show, and that'll be late 80s. I guess it really counts. Maybe it didn't. Maybe it doesn't. But we're going to talk about that because that was a nice little run with Willie Burton and Lynch and all those guys. We'll have like a short little show on that as well. But any last words, sir, before we get on out of here?
Well, I mean, just going back to the Gangelhoff thing. I mean, I think she – it just stinks of an axe to grind because first of all, as a tutor, second of all, how does a tutor know which channels to go to, you know, destroy a program? Three, probably wasn't working on her own, had some other thing going on. It just, you know, the term Karen, as we're saying now, I mean, that might've been probably the first Karen on record was this, and it really set the program back for a good decade. And it still probably hasn't fully recovered from that. Just as far as recruiting went, I mean, Patino's really working and recruiting well, but I mean, it's really kind of on its best legs since that moment. And speaking of Loserville, I mean, we hired Dan Munson, and the rumor there was that really the guy behind the scenes, Mark Few, was the reason why Gonzaga was successful. Turned out to be true. We hired Munson. He didn't do well. Few still at Gonzaga very successfully. So we just got the wrong guy out of Gonzaga. We should have looked into that a little bit more.
What do you know?
But yeah.
And let Dungy and Billick go. But, hey, Tomlin, yeah, we don't need him. We don't need these good assistant coaches, right?
Right. And so, I mean, one thing leads to another. But, yeah, if you want to follow us on Instagram, it's in living.in.loserville.podcast on Instagram. Numbers are going up a little bit, and we'll do some previews for the next show, a little wrap up on this show. So thanks for listening.
And you know, if you're the second reason, who would she call? You could there if you work for the college, you know the NCAA number. There's a hotline you can call and be like, hey, what the fuck? But I think you're right. There had to have been some sort of. I believe that Clem was like, hey. Dude, we're replacing you. And she's like, oh, really? Okay, fine. No fucking problem, buddy. No problem at all. You just give me my trip, I'll leave, but I'm going to fucking fuck you. Man, that sucked. Because like you said, I mean, this shit happens all the time, but you rarely get the tutor or the booster. Of all two things to tell, those two, you're fucked if those two tell. No doubt about it. All right, we'll see you next week. Like I said, we appreciate the listens. Have yourself a good weekend. Peace.